My name is Ann Quigg Curtis. I am 52 years old. Today is November 23rd, 2017. I'm speaking with William Quigg, who is my father. We are recording this in Louisville, Kentucky. Dad, tell me about a lesson you learned from your father.
I don't know if I can say what the lesson was, more other than just to say it affected my life in ways that I unconsciously probably never thought of, and I don't know how to quantify it, but it had a deep effect on how I viewed, let's say, difficulties within the family and my children, and how I dealt with them and how I approached them as the years go by and things happen, you know, troubles and difficulties. And what is your reaction from a discipline standpoint? So I'm 83, and this happened probably 73 years ago. I would say I was 10, 11, I can't remember. So I'm recollecting a story that I'm sure I don't have all the details right, but I have the impression right. It was a Saturday night, and my parents were having a social party, and then they were going to go out for dinner. We had a pool with a pool house, and the party was around in the pool house. And my mother asked me to go get some aspirin in the bedside table by their bed, in their bedroom. And I went up to the house and in the bedroom and opened the drawer, and there's the aspirin. But right next to the aspirin were a box of matches. And I was at that stage. We lived in the country on a 100-acre farm. And I was in the stage where boys kind of, they don't do it anymore, but farm boys did this back then a lot, set fires on stuff out in the field, burn, put them out, I don't know, just one of those things that maybe a lot of people hearing this can relate to. And I took, they had a canopy bed. If you've never seen one, you may have to Google and see what it looks like, but it has a canopy on the top and then a kind of a lace curtain around the bottom between the bottom of the wood and the floor. And I took and I set the lace curtain on fire. I have no idea why, what, it, I just know it happened. And then I tried to put the fire out. And of course it flaked out because of the kind of material it was, and I must have gotten some of the flakes in my hair. So I thought I had the fire out, and I take the aspirin, I go back and give it to my mother. My dad says, "What's that in your hair?" And in a totally illogical answer, I said, "Well, I was playing in the sandbox and we'd killed some chickens today." Hello, between going up to run the errand, I went to the sandbox and played, and I'm right back. Yeah, this made a lot of sense. He took off and went to the house, and I knew the bed had been on fire and I was in trouble. So I took off running toward the road, which is like 3 football fields away from the house, a dirt road. And there's some trees out there, and I went out hiding. It's dusk, and I'm out there in the trees. The next thing I know, here my two sisters, who are 7 and 9 years older than I am, yelling "Bill, Bill!" and people out the whole. There were probably 20 people there, are all out there looking for me, and I'm scared to death. I finally gave up. You know, I surrendered and went. My dad picked me up, put me on his shoulders, carried me back to the house, and didn't say a thing.
Not one word.
Put me to bed. I recollect not hearing anything. So he could have said, but that is, it's how my impression that really counts here. And that was my punishment. And they went out for dinner. I think they had a house sitter, but because I was only 10. I never heard another word. He died when I was 15, and I never talked to him about it in the ensuing years. Mm. So I have no idea what his reaction was as an adult going to say, "All right, tell me about that."
Yeah, to be able to go back and hear his perspective
and
on why he handled it.
I'm brought back to that story a lot. It was just recently at my church study group. We were talking about something that brought the subject up of parent-child relationships, and the guy who spoke before me had a father who didn't spare the belt to spoil the child, mm-hmm. attitude, and was gruff and rough and had a contention and physically, you know, put his hand on your bottom if you got in trouble. And I had, he told his story, and then I told mine, and here are two totally different approaches to discipline that were right there, always brings it to mind. What effect did it have on me? I can't quantify it. It's maybe almost a trite way to say it, the second chance attitude. Mm-hmm. But that's more than that. It's not that I give you a second chance. It's how do I talk to you about what happened? Mm-hmm. How do I communicate? I'm talking family-wise, your children. I love you. What happened was wrong. Now what can we do? And where are we going to go from here, sort of thing. It affected me more that way, and maybe you, Anne, can answer that. Mm-hmm. I can't answer it. It's and we've never had this conversation, how have I responded to family situations where maybe you could see the influence of that in my life later on? That's kind of an unknown to me anyway.
Sure. I think just for myself and memories of our family growing up, I'm not sure I consciously, I didn't know that story until I was an adult. But as I look back as you, my parents, as disciplinarians, I always kind of jump to the reasoning of it was the Quaker way. And I believe, we practiced Methodism weekly in church, but the tenets of our moral compass were formed through your Quaker upbringing, and our exposure to the to the meeting house and attending friends meetings. So I always kind of associated that quietness with the Quaker way, and he certainly was a Quaker, and so it would of course make sense that would be the way that would be practiced. But certainly, you were always the quieter. You said you disciplined through silence, and much like your father. And we certainly had a mom who balanced that with her own Lutheran upbringing. But
there's a Quaker query or question, as the Quakers call them, because they don't have a discipline manual or a dogma. And it kind of applies to this. He carries me back on a long walk of 2 or 3 football fields to the house and says nothing for a long period of time to a 10-year-old. Mm-hmm. Is what I'm thinking of saying going to improve upon the silence? Mm-hmm. I knew that expression, but I just ran across it recently, and it just kind of comes to mind right now. Is what I'm going to say in the discipline going to improve upon the silence that I'm showing while I take you from your problem and set you down or something? I mean, we have a period of where there can be some quietness in this before we talk. So is what I'm going to say better than not saying anything? Mm-hmm. And that's really what he was practicing. Silence.
And we think that this is an easy out. To be silent is an easy out, but it actually requires great strength of restraint, and which is not easy to do, especially when you are seeing a lesson that needs to be driven home and you're shaping the souls of your children. It is most difficult to stay silent, but often that does have the most impact.
A contemporary example of that in another mode, I think, happened between the two of us, and we were at the Grand Canyon, and we were looking at a view, and you were very excited about it, and it was exciting and everything, and you turned to me and said, "Isn't this exciting?" And for some reason, there was a pause, and I said, "Yes," in a quiet way, and I don't know where that came from, but it's the same principle. And I, in business, if there was a crisis I was in the broadcasting industry and my station I was running, if there was a kind of an internal crisis and I had to make a decision, the fault that I was charged with often was, "Bill, it just takes you too long to deal with this." Yeah, I did overdo it sometimes. I just went a little too long I think that's where it affects me unconsciously. Let's see let's don't react right away. Let's see where we are. What's going on here? Let me have all the facts. I tend not to do that, because when it happens, you don't know everything that happened. Mm-hmm. We tend to respond, and in this technical age, we're reactive, and we put a post on, and we don't have the story. We hear news stories, and you find out, there's more to it than that. What is the backdrop? And I want to get all of that before I respond, which requires a little, let's hold back a minute, let's find out what's going on, let's settle down, and don't just jump right in there. Yes, it can have a negative thing. You take a little too long. Mm-hmm. But that's minor compared to the positive of when you do speak, you speak intelligently. And I don't mean educationally. I mean you speak to the issue appropriately, mm-hmm. might be a better way to say it, as opposed to just having a quick reaction.
Yeah, in a world of instant gratification and reactive news feeds, I think mm-hmm. you're right.
It's
a little more difficult, yeah. A little more challenging, mm-hmm. we don't think. So do you have any advice? So how would you communicate this to your grandchildren in helping instill that?
In an emotional situation, hold thy tongue.
Such a good Quaker phrase. That's easy. That's simple. That's great.
Not complicated.
Hold thy tongue. We're going to have to print that out.
That just came to me. I don't know. I've never used that before. But it goes back to that thought. Is what I'm going to say improve upon saying nothing?
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Dad.
Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving.
I'm happy Thanksgiving to you. That was